Hello and welcome to Sunday night, late edition, Relatively Football. I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes. I'm with my brother Theo. Theo's just come straight from the football pitch. He's just about caught his breath. He's drinking some grapefruit juice. Theo, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's been a, you know, it's been a heavy week. I'm sure all our listeners are very clued in on why that is. No one wants to hear about my six-a-side team. But yeah, it is a lot of fun. I feel very blessed to have somewhere to go and kick a ball. Organised football is great. Try and find some resources if you're looking for organised football in your area, wherever you may be. How you doing, Flo?
I'm all right. I've got a bit of a bad back. I don't really know why. And I had to stand on the train back from Leicester today. So you can imagine that made me really happy.
As someone who is pro train, good to hear that everyone's using it. As someone who's also pro bad back, shame to hear it. You hate to see it.
Yeah, pro bad back. Bit disrespectful to my back. You mean anti bad back?
I meant anti bad back.
God.
Also,
what really annoyed me, like, shout out anyone who uses East Midlands Railway. It was an 8-coach train and only 4 carriages were in use. Make that make sense to me. And the trains were on strike. I think they're on strike for the entirety of October. So this, it's a reduced service. Anyway, you can imagine James the gone. Absolute hoot we had on the way back. Luckily, I was on the fast train, so it was only 1 hour and 10 minutes. I did a bit of work, and then I stood up and put my iPad on some luggage so I could catch up on last night Strictly. But that's for another podcast.
Do you get, while we're on what you're watching on the train, yeah, do you get the WNBA in the UK?
Yes, Sky Sports have a deal. So okay. They do some live games, and then you can like rewatch games, I think, as well. So yeah, it's as part of an NBA WNBA sort of like partnership. So
there was a pretty juicy Chicago Sky Connecticut Sun.
I did see some of the clips of the Phoenix Mercury's game the other day. That was good game.
I'm rooting for the Mercury.
Yeah,
I've been a quasi Mercury fan since the bubble.
Nice.
Rooting for the Merc.
But back to some women's football. I think we just got to go straight into Man City, really, don't we? Because
yeah, we're going to start. I think we'll start with the FAWSL, and then we'll touch on obviously everything over the Atlantic at the end, kind of give it its own space. But yeah, let's get through this weekend's football, and yeah, I guess you know, cue the clown car music.
Well, I know we talked about Gareth Taylor last weekend, but Jessica Eve Kennedy has replied to our tweet saying, "Think it's time to get into it," asterisk, about Gareth. So we're going to get into it, Jessica. But yeah, let's start with this game, because I was at the King Power while this game was going on. I was getting some text updates from yourself, getting some text updates from Jesse Pug Humphreys. I was seeing stuff on Twitter, but all in all, stats wise, City with over 70% possession, City with over 20 shots, but West Ham, the press, Ollie Harder press, TM, worked a treat, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great game of football. I think, you know, this game, I think the stats, it's one of those games where the stats really don't tell you the whole picture. And especially the first half, I thought City were poor, but they weren't necessarily bad. I just thought maybe they were uninventive, but they did control the game. West Ham get a goal right before half time. You know, kind of sloppy marking, but really nice header from Brynja's daughter. Excuse me on any poor pronunciation there of the Icelandic name. And really, you know, what I think you saw was City's anxiety, or maybe I would call it apprehension, kind of took hold of the team, and City were almost playing themselves. And I think you're going to see a lot of people calling, you know, we know he's short on players, we know he's got injuries, but should Jill Scott be playing as a centre-back, especially if you're going to have a lot of the ball, especially if West Ham are going to press you? I almost think, let's get weird. Let's put Caroline Weir at centre-back. That's where you're going to have a lot of the ball. No, I'm serious. You're going to need your best passers. This team is going to press you. You need your most control. You need your Kim Littles at centre-back, essentially. And I think Man City, Gareth Taylor, whatever you want to say here, they fluffed this one. You know, they should have been playing Bunny Shaw. She gets a hat-trick midweek. She's coming
hot. Yeah, that does not make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think our mentions or all of Twitter is basically burning down Manchester on the account of Barney Shaw not playing. And at this point, I don't know why, you know, all evidence would say otherwise. Ellen White does have a goal ruled out today, which looked good. We didn't really see a replay as per FA player, but more on that later.
No, I was just going to say, the thing about City is that because they've got quality, and this is the interesting thing about Gareth Taylor's predicament, is because they've got quality, they're still going to win big in certain games, and that's going to distract from the issues. Case in point, midweek, and that big cup win. Case in point, that win against Everton, when Everton were really poor and made errors in order to gift City opportunities. Like, I felt like they didn't have to come out of second gear in that game. And it feels like, I don't know if they're going to sack Taylor. I really don't. They might. But if they don't, they can kind of just coast through this season in a quite crappy way by going from like big win to big win, potentially getting to a cup final, and sort of just bouncing around, not challenging for the title, no way now, and just kind of riding through that way. And that just papers over the cracks, because even with a patched together side, they're going to beat, you know, half of this league, right?
No, and this game could easily have been 1-1 in that respect. You know, maybe we wouldn't be playing the clown car music. We wouldn't be burning down Manchester, although arguably Barney Shaw should still be starting. We're yet to really see why that is, beyond Ellen White has a great track record in this league for the last, you know, 10 years. But what I would say is, when you're looking at Gareth Taylor, when you're looking at this team, his CV keeps getting worse. Resume for the Americans on the line. You know, it keeps getting worse every week that goes by. But I think what you want to see is, if you're going to have 73% possession, you know, we saw similar things against Arsenal. If you're going to have a lot of the ball, who is controlling the ball? Who is being incisive? Who is working it and using the ball in a way that is attacking and interesting and provocative and fast and quick pace? And that's what was so poor for me today, is for all the ball, that West Ham press, that West Ham disruption was really working. And especially sort of minute 35 to minute 61, right before Ellen White had a equaliser ruled out, I think West Ham were played arguably the best I've ever seen them under Ollie Harder. And it was because they pressed so well, they moved into the pockets of space, they blocked off passing lanes, and Man City had no response. And maybe outside of Alex Greenwood and Demi Stokes, who I thought played kind of well, and this one, and Lauren Hemp was really working her butt off. I really think it was a game where Man City's star players, Man City's quality players, didn't show up. They didn't move the ball fast enough. They didn't move the ball well enough. They were sloppy in possession. And like I said, you need to get a Cameron Weir back there. You need to know if West Ham are going to pin you in or go direct. You know, look at something like Edervall's doing. Try and go from defence to attack in three passes. But City just kept causing themselves trouble. And to be fair, the only thing I will say is that after that Ellen White equaliser that was ruled out, that FA player didn't rule out, so for 8 minutes we were all watching it on FA player thinking it was 1-1. Absolutely atrocious broadcasting. FA player, I love you, but sort it out. You know, West Ham did go into their shell the final 20 minutes, and actually City, you know, by Lauren Hemp and Bunny White coming on, we did start to see a bit of attacking football at the end. And I think this game could easily have been 1-1. Yui Hasegawa scores my favourite goal of the weekend. Demi Stokes obviously very culpable for the mistake, so maybe that takes off some negative points on her day. But yeah, West Ham were fantastic for about 20 minutes in this game, and that's all they needed to do to disrupt and beat City. And I think that is what's really disappointing.
Would you say FA player is a traitor?
FA player let me down.
Did you notice my Oliver Rodrigo reference there, or did you just you just completely jumped over it? Doesn't matter. I'm trying my best.
FA player didn't cheat, but it's still a trap.
And I also just want to shout out myself, because I have been saying hashtag trust the process with the Ollie Harder press since day one, but I've just said that they needed someone who could finish the opportunities that come their way. Today they did. But what I wanted to quickly ask you was it a case of, and I feel like you've answered the question a little bit, but was it a case of bad day for Man City, or West Ham were the better side? Because I feel like in these situations, you always talk about the bigger team screwing up. I mean, the case of the game against Spurs, you know, all we talked about was the refereeing decision, obviously was terrible, and Man City wasting those chances. We perhaps didn't give Spurs actually enough credit for changing the game in many ways, good substitutions and you know, switching the momentum. So do you think how did it play out in that respect?
I think it was a game of three acts. First act, City were poor. Second act, West Ham were good. third act, you get a bit of luck and, you know, you score a worldie lob and you capitalize on an error and Man City bring on Bunny White too late. And that's the thing. I think it was sort of a game of three acts and West Ham won 1.8 of those acts. It was sort of like a 1.8 to 1.2 sort of game in three phases. That's kind of how I would describe it. But West Ham were good today, especially very good for about 25 minutes. I think trust the process, but harder keep trusting the process, because I think they did get a little bit anxious at the end and they kind of retreated.
Yeah, so I mean, we haven't really come to a conclusion on Gareth though. I just want you to do a really quick prediction. Do you think he's still going to be around next week for the Manchester derby?
For 33 games unbeaten, they lose to Spurs. They've now lost two in a row, three in a row for the first time in WSL. If he loses to Manchester United, I think he's gone. I actually don't think they will lose to Manchester United, just because losing four games in a row is so rare. I'm just going to kind of go for the law of averages. What do you think? And so therefore, I think he's going to stay in the job.
I think he's going to stay in the job because I just think City like internal hires too much. I said in the podcast before, and I don't really see who would perhaps take over maybe his assistant for the rest of the season. But I just don't think they're going to look to pick up any of the managers that are available at the moment, unless Nick Cushing were to come back or something like that. So let's move on, but let us know your thoughts on Gareth Taylor. The saga continues.
Jess, Eve Kennedy, I hope that was enough.
Yeah.
We've got to move on.
I'll do a quick little bit on Leicester, Spurs, and then maybe we'll touch on Arsenal and just how good they are. Mesmerising football.
That was a good game.
On
good
Saturday
game well.
Night. So, Leicester, yeah, first time being back at the King Power since 2010. Love what they've done with the place. Love the staff. The staff were so friendly. The press bit is amazing. Really good crowd in today. Over 2,000. And that was given that the men's game was playing at exactly the same time. Thought it was a brilliant crowd.
Which is atrocious, by the way. We got to get rid of that, FA.
I mean,
do something
I
about
know
it.
It's really annoying, but like you can't have it all. But I do get it's annoying, but like, you know, we're working with the best what we can get sometimes. But anyway, yeah, really good crowd. Leicester just offered very little going forward. Classic kind of 2021, 2022 Spurs of having loads of shots on goal and not taking as many opportunities as they should have done. Yeah, same old Spurs in terms of over, you know, double digits chances on goal, not scoring them, but not getting into trouble. And that's just really because Leicester just really didn't threaten at all. They were sitting so deep most of the first half, barely got out their own half. They didn't have a shot on target. Their best opportunities came from the same Gemma Purfield free kick three times over, where she put a ball into the back post. First one didn't even get near one of her teammates. Second one really threatened and just went wide. And then the third one, I think, came off a Spurs defender and went out for a corner. So that was their best opportunity of the game. And they tried it three times and Spurs didn't really deal with it either of those times. But I think all in all, Spurs can sit back and relax now. They've done what they need to do. They've done the job four games into the season, 100% record. But they
unbelievable. Who would have said
and,
that
you know,
before the season?
At the same time, it's like, well, it doesn't really matter almost in many ways what happens now. But they do need to still find a reliable goal scorer. They really, really do. Rachel Williams looks like a new woman. She looks like she shaved years off her career. She's in fantastic form. Three goals in four games now, which is great, but I still think they need to finish these chances that they're creating.
Are Spurs this year's Everton?
No. Well, actually, no, they are, because they've had because like Everton, they've had a quite comfortable fixture list to start the season, which I obviously like inflates things a little bit. They don't have as much quality as Everton had
as last year's Everton
last season and have now. And, you know, they don't have someone like Varley Govan, who's a really good presence in the box. Like, Kit Graham is supplying brilliant set pieces to them, and they don't have someone who can finish them. And it's a persistent issue that with finishing. So I think there was a little bit of frustration from Rhianne Skinner afterwards when Tom Gary and I spoke to her. But I mean, you with four wins from four, you can't really complain in many ways. And some good clean sheets as well.
Ariane says Clermont is their pick for best signing. Absolutely bossed it today. They said especially after Zdorsky came off, the captain looked like they were organising everything and taking the lead, obviously signed from Everton. You were there. What was your take on that? What did you see from Clemmer?
Yeah, I was chatting to Tom Garry about her after the game, actually, because she really stood out to me last week as well in that Reading game. So I had my eyes on her again today, and she's really good. She's really, really good. And then Tom Garry was telling me that actually when he interviewed Willie Kirk after he'd signed Clemmer on, he was telling Tom how good a player she was and how excited he was to work with her. And when I was doing my prep, I think I read that she only had about 20 appearances during her time there, and a lot of them I think were in the Cup. So I don't think she kind of got really stuck into being like a go-to starter for Willie Kirk. But I think she's brilliant. I think she's found the perfect team for her. She got handed the captain's armband as well when Zdorsky went on. So Rhianne Skinner obviously likes her. She's so composed on the ball, and she's that player you need because she's reliable. Like her teammates pass to her knowing she's going to hold on to the ball, knowing that she's not going to lose it, knowing she's going to pick the right pass. She's very aggressive as well, and she's perfect. She's perfect. I think she's definitely one of my favorite additions to any team this season, kind of bar, you know, like the top recruitment from Arsenal and stuff like that. I think she's perfect.
Quickly, I got a couple of questions for you about Leicester. You know, we'll bring him in here. Tash Flynn didn't start this game. Paige Bettigelden didn't start this game. I know that's a two-game week. They had the 6-0 loss to City in the Cup. So, you know, tough one for Leicester here. But obviously, they're still on 0 points, even though performances, you know, haven't been terrible. Probably down there, obviously, with Birmingham and Reading, but maybe morale is slightly higher. Do you have any feelings about their starting 11? Who should come in, come out? And then my second question is, we got the news that Emil Heskey has sort of been promoted in his role at Leicester. Do you think Jonathan Morgan should be worried about his job at all?
Not sure yet. Come back to me potentially in a couple of weeks. Not sure yet. I think Leicester will be fine because I think Birmingham will be that bad. But we'll get onto Manchester United, Birmingham shortly. And I do think there was a lot of heart. There was a lot of heart shown in that performance tonight. So I still think Birmingham are definitely going to go down, and I think Leicester will be fine in that respect because Birmingham will be worse than them. But Leicester have had some good opportunities to start the season to pick up points, and they've got to start soon because Birmingham could find some rhythm and then things will get tougher. But I still feel pretty confident that Leicester will stay up.
I just want to give one more shout out to Becky Spencer. Another clean sheet, one goal conceded on the season.
Yeah, she's been fantastic.
What a start for her. And she was obviously phenomenal in the City game, which is the only goal they've conceded all year, that Lauren Hemp goal. That's transition right there, Flo. Birmingham, Manchester, you want to say one more thing?
No, I was just going to say, do you want to get a chuck onto the Villa-Arsenal game? But I can quickly touch on...
Let's go Birmingham, yeah. United. I feel like we were already talking about
okay.
Birmingham.
Yeah, so.
The Mark Skinner derby.
Yeah, so I watched some of this from the bath. Very enjoyable. Really enjoyed it.
You love to see it.
Just to try and ease some of my back pain. A good Sunday night Sky sesh. Yeah, I think Birmingham were defended well, to be honest, actually. Because I haven't seen a lot of their games this season. And I know we've kind of shat on them a lot. And it's a kind of miserable state of affairs. But you know what? I think Louise Quinn was fantastic tonight. They defended really, really well. They contained Manchester United, especially in the first half. And then in the second half, United just kind of worked out that they needed to use the width a little bit more. Lissi Russo really got into her stride. And they just kind of picked apart Birmingham a little bit more. But Birmingham didn't get their second goal until fairly late on. Sorry, Man United didn't get their second goal until fairly late on. The first goal just kind of... The movement was a little bit too good, Leah Goulton managed to kind of creep one in right in the corner. She was really good tonight as well, and then Ella Toon got their second. But I think they can take a lot of heart from tonight's performance. Lucy Quinn has had a really good chance in the first half, probably their best chance of the game, and she couldn't get herself kind of composed, and she was off balance and slipped and couldn't get a shot on target. There was a corner in the second half as well that was a brilliant delivery that Mary Earps managed to sort of palm out, push out a corner that looked like it was going to go directly into the goal, a really, really dangerous delivery. So that was another good opportunity. So there were moments there for Birmingham, and we know that they have to make the most of counterattacks and set pieces, and that's just kind of going to be the narrative for their season. So it's a shame, because it would have been a really good chance, I think, for them to get a point tonight, because United weren't quite at their best. They had too many central players, so everything was very narrow and down the middle for a lot of the game. And as soon as they kind of stretched things out a little bit more, use the width, use Galton on the left and Russo on the right, things started to change a little bit more. And Emily Ramsey, to be fair, on loan from United, she had a really good game, put in a really, really good performance, and it potentially could have been worse for Birmingham. But I think there's some promising signs from them, and you know, they've obviously still got heart despite not being able to pick up any points. That's my little summary. Shall we move on to Villa Arsenal, the Saturday night monsoon match?
Oh yeah, the weather. I was just going to say, nice assist for Hannah Blundell, living her best
life.
She
missed an absolute sitter though. In the second half, there was some nice pass, really nice passing moves, and then it was kind of like United, just that last final kind of contact, that final ball, they just couldn't quite get there. But yeah, Blundell missed a really good chance the second half, but it'll come. I think, you know, quite a few new players as well coming together at United, and I think it's really important that they bounce back from that terrible Chelsea result.
All right, from St Andrews to Villa Park, your mate Carlo Ward continuing a very nice start to the season. That sounds a bit silly because obviously they lost 4-0, but I actually think Aston Villa played pretty well in this one.
Yeah, for a good what? For like 45, 50 minutes, they defended well, didn't they?
Yeah, I think you're seeing, you know, the opposite of what we saw today with West Ham, where maybe West Ham are at their best pushing forward. Villa are so good at sitting deep and you know, what people like to call the low block. I think that's what this Villa team can do really well. They can give you the space that they want to give you. They select the space and then you move into it, and then they shift and they kind of minimize the danger really, really well. And you know, you look how good that Arsenal team is, it's not easy to keep them at bay. And you know, Mana Iwabuchi comes on at half time, and then very quickly, although she wasn't involved in the goal, you see how quickly they come unpicked. And then, I mean, the Tobin Heath Mana Iwabuchi goal, the assist from Heath was just phenomenal football. And you kind of felt like Villa played well, but withstanding this Arsenal team for a prolonged period of time is obviously impossible and or improbable, let's say. And Carla Ward after the game said it's the best Arsenal team she's ever seen, and I think a lot of people at home were thinking the same thing.
I think it was actually the best Arsenal team she's seen in 10 years, but still.
Excuse me. Rachel Yankee stands, you're undefeated.
I want to shout out one of my faves, Lotte Webber-Moy, who started at centre back yesterday. I think that's their first league start of the season, because they started midweek in the FA Cup game against Spurs. And I'm a huge Webber-Moy fan. I'm so excited about her potential. She's so good on the ball, and I think she's going to be, you know, a starting centre back for England for many years to come. And yeah, just want to shout out, very good performance. Obviously, Kim Little is having a fantastic season. You know, going from strength to strength, and just love her in her absolute element, just bopping people out the way with her low centre of gravity and strong bum. We just love to see it. And the connection between Mana Iwabuchi and Tobin Heath, it's like they've been playing together for years. It's telepathic. I mean, they're just unreal. Like, so that leads us on to a few listener questions. One of them was Arsenal-Barca predictions for Tuesday night. And then the other one was, obviously, Katie McCabe's ridiculous little chip over Hannah Hampton. We had a question from Nora about this week's goals and who is going to be the first to lob the keeper from past the halfway line, in brackets, or attempt to. I'm going to go
Mana Iwabuchi.
Mana Iwabuchi. I was going to go Katie McCabe, just because of positioning wise, she could, from her left wing back, just ping it. Who's your shout?
I think Mana. I mean, I actually take your point that position wise, you know, it would have to be like some sort of free.
Maybe even Leah Williamson in like a sort of DM, just have a pop.
Yeah. It does feel like it might be an Arsenal player. I'm trying to think. I mean, Kaylee Green for Brighton
Came
pretty
season.
Close. It wasn't She lobbed the keeper from 45-50 yards. It wasn't quite her own half, but yeah, Kagman as well in down south. She's definitely one to watch.
Was this a Brighton podcast? Bloody hell. And then Barca Arsenal predictions for Tuesday night. What you got? Who you got?
I think maybe it's the bias in me, but I kind of think Arsenal will get a result, whether or not that's a win or a draw. I could maybe see 2-2. Kind of
2-2 would be a brilliant game.
I think we'll see some goals. I mean, the Houston Dash got a 3-2 loss against Barcelona. I don't think Arsenal will play like that, which was a lot of sitting deep and wait, giving them space in non-dangerous areas. But yeah, I think it's going to definitely be end-to-end. I think we're seeing how quickly this Arsenal team can attack, you know, 2, 3, 4 passes. And I think that's going to make for a really good game. It feels like maybe I'm giving Arsenal a bit of bias here because they played Champions League qualifiers. And I wonder if that gives them... They've kind of played more European
matches.
Played
a higher level, no disrespect to...
No, exactly. Maybe that, but that's my bias. I think people underestimate the Spanish division and how good the teams are there. And Barcelona do get disrespected, and they showed everyone that they were way better than everyone else in Champions League. And obviously, the Champions League final echoes on. So maybe I don't see Arsenal winning, but I see them getting a result.
I'm going to go... I really like your 2-2 prediction. So just to be different, I'm going to go 3-2 Barca. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. And I think it's be very open. And yeah, I'm going to go 3-2 Barcelona. Moving on, you want to go to the Yorkovisto Carps?
Yeah, great game down south. I mean, I think, you know, I was thinking about this today. I was kind of ruminating on this one when I woke up. I sound like a bit of a psychopath, but...
I couldn't sleep at all. I was thinking about the Carps.
Couldn't sleep. Was thinking about Brighton loss. But, you know... Brighton are 4 years into their master plan under Hope Powell, what she's kind of revolutionised with them. And you know, I think they are about where they should be in the WSL. You know, fantastic couple of games. Losing to Chelsea, losing a tough one to a very good Carla Ward side who looked, you know, obstinate last weekend. So, you know, credit where credit's due. And Chelsea obviously are 7-10 years ahead of them in their build and Emma Hayes's vision and Emma Hayes's beauty of putting a great team together, managing them in different ways, you know, having Guro Wrighton as a wing back. I made the joke about it's great to see Hannah Blundell living her best life at Man United, but I think Emma Hayes has kind of maybe solved her fullback issue. Chelsea were very good today at bringing different attackers into the game, having this formation that kind of like morphs like a bottle of slime, and you don't know who's coming in and who's going where. And
is Chelsea's formation the flubber of the WSL?
It very much is. And Flubber, as we saw, when you put it on your shoes, makes you very good at basketball. And so Flubber, when you put it in a formation,
makes you very good at football. So true. Wow. Incredible.
So yeah, great opening goal for Guro Wrighton. And I think Brighton, like this game last year, maybe if you keep it tight for longer. Well, that's what I was going to say. When Daniel Carter scored that goal to start the second half, you thought maybe Brighton were going to get back into it, you know, getting back to 2-1. And it was a really well-taken goal. It's funny that both the Chelsea's first goal and Brighton's only goal came from quick throw-ons where the defence just wasn't reset. Mm. And I think, you know, if you're Hope Powell, you're looking at that and going, you weren't set from a throw-on.
Basic.
And likewise, Emma Hayes. It was quite basic, both the opening goals for each team. But, you know, what Daniel Carter did on the swivel, the finish, I mean, that is peak. That's when you know you're playing at your best. And here's one for the numbers heads. Daniel Carter's XG this season, obviously smaller sample size, is exactly the same as it was last year per 90 minutes. But she's obviously scoring at a higher rate. She has 2 goals in 4 matches, whereas she had 3 goals in 14 matches last year. So you can see that she's getting in the same positions, but she's finishing them right now. And I think that's an interesting
sign. And also, I would also say, though, I think she's getting a lot more supply than she was at Reading. I've talked before about the Reading pot shot mentality, and she's not someone who likes to take a lot of pot shots. She's more someone who wants to get in the box and be supplied. And I think that's why she's kind of getting more rewards this season with Brighton.
Yeah, but the XG heads would say that actually the positions she's getting in are almost identical in Brighton and Reading. At least I'm just going off the XG per 90. So by all means, says, you know, the data is not perfect, but it is. I just thought that was an interesting stat. Last year it was 0.27 per 90. This year it's 0.25, so almost identical. But obviously she's finishing chances at a slightly higher rate. Obviously, you know, just want to keep saying Chelsea were great. Both goals, two of the 3 goals came down the left side against Koivisto. You hate to see it.
Yeah, I did hear that she had a bit of a toughie.
She had a tough game, and I think, you know, Hope Powell went to play 5 at the back. Sometimes that works. I think when you do have the players who've worked really well this year in their positions, Kirk Dyte and Williams in the middle, Letizia and Koivisto at the fullback, and then you ask Letizia and Koivisto to play wing back, you know, they're still getting used to that. It wasn't perfect, and Fliss Gibbons had a really tough game in the middle of the park. Gets beaten for the Sam Kerr header. I think, you know, it was a little bit of chaos, and I think you got to give credit for Hope Powell trying, and like I said, for where she is in her build, a 3-1 loss away to Chelsea is not a bad result, and that's what I was kind of ruminating on this morning. But I think maybe what she tried didn't pay off, and that's okay.
And the Carps will swim again. Last game of the weekend to round up, Reading-Everton. It's a sorry state of affairs over at the Mad Stad, I would say. Worrying and interesting. I was chatting to Tom Garry at King Power today, and he said that he put Reading in his bottom three. I had been fairly kind of happy about the recruitment higher up the pitch at Reading with Havermere, Rose and Tash Dowie, but you do really, really fear for them defensively. Molly Bartrip going to Spurs. She's had an okay season so far at Spurs. They haven't recruited enough to fill the gaps at the back. Emma Mitchell obviously is expecting a baby as well, so they've lost an important wing back there.
I mean, I was just going to say, you say defensively, but they haven't scored a goal.
Yeah, of course. But I think today you saw just how all over the shop they are at the back.
Well, a bit like Brighton, you know, Anna Evergaard scored a goal which was more of force and desire than it was of quality. Great goal, you know, for Everton. And I think Emsley's second goal had a lot of talent on it. I think maybe Maloney was, I don't know what was going on with her wall for that free kick that Dan.
Yeah, that was a dodgy wall.
It was a bit dodgy, but I think once Reading get behind, the heads drop, and whatever Kelly Chambers is saying or what she's trying to do doesn't work. I think Deanne Rose looked all right in this one.
I hope Deanne Rose, you know, whatever happens this season with Reading, I don't think they're going to go down because, you know, like I've said, I think Birmingham will go down. But whatever happens to Deanne Rose, I hope she hangs about. I hope it's not kind of like a one season in the WSL and she's had enough kind of thing, because I really, really, really love her and thought she was fantastic against Spurs last weekend, and I'd like to see more of her. So I hope she doesn't kind of lose heart by being in a team that's going to have a difficult season. I hope she gets an opportunity to kind of like be the player, because she is so good and her quality is above, you know, a lot of the players she's playing with. Just defensively, yeah, there's just not a lot of physicality there. There's not, you know, really lacking a leader as well. And it's just a bit all over shot.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. Like you said, losing Daniel Carter, losing Farah Williams, you know, on that leadership thing. Jess Fishlock was there last year. Angharra James played, I think, every minute.
They lost Tash Arlen to a head injury as well today, and she's, you know, captain. So that's it's a difficult one.
Everton did jump Man City in the table, though. I thought that was notable. Tough start to the season. City obviously smashed Everton on the first day of the season. Wow, does that feel like a long time ago now? And so that I thought was notable. You know, Toffees, at least they're jumping someone. They're moving onwards. Great win for them today. Reading will welcome Aston Villa next weekend, and then there's a bit of a break, a League Cup game, and then they travel to St Andrews to play Birmingham. So a couple of big weeks coming up for Reading.
Would also say, of Reading's four matches, they've played Man United, Arsenal and Everton. So Spurs is the one game that would have really hurt, because it was losing by a goal and a match where they had some really good opportunities to win. So that's why I feel like that one will sting. The other ones, where you look on it, on the balance, like, you know, those are games that they probably would have chalked off. Maybe Everton, they would have liked to have got a point. You know, they could have tried. I think they beat them last season, didn't they? So that would be the ones that, you know, that I think that Spurs one will really sting. But I think, like you said, I think they can bounce back. That's a WSL roundup. It's obviously been a really crazy couple of days for the NWSL. A really difficult few days for everyone in the league. The reporters covering it. But all kind of sparked by some incredible journalism at the Athletic that kind of, yeah, ignited a really hectic, traumatic 24 hours and resulted in the sacking of Paul Riley, the resignation of Lisa Baird, the suspension of the league for this weekend, and the beginning of the end, question mark? I mean, I've been thinking, and I know there's conversations about it on Twitter, you know, is this going to be a case of Do we need to start from scratch to span the whole league? I mean, what next, Theo, do you think going forward?
I mean, I think it depends what you think of the NWSL or professional American women's soccer football, what you think it is. You know, if you think it's the players, then they've found a new voice. They've never been stronger. They've never been more talented on the pitch. They've never demanded better standards. They have the strength in a unity, in a players association, in a union to suspend their league, to take back power, to call out, you know, atrocious, abhorrent behavior. That is a promising sign. Whether or not that looks like the NWSL, the logo, the current, you know, deals that are inked, its association with USSF, the US Soccer Federation that runs the national team, etc. You know, we're still figuring out the fallout. The national team, as everyone knows, has been in a long legal battle with the federation itself, and by proxy, this wave of support, unionizing and organization and solidarity, most importantly, from the players is what is forcing a CBA and in turn forcing a pause on the league, forcing Lisa Baird's reignition, forcing people to actually go and protect the players, women athletes, all athletes, to be honest. I think, you know, what I would say, but you know, while you're listening to us go on about this, is go and get yourself an athletic subscription and support great journalism and the strength of Manna Shim and Sinead Farrelly and the journalism of Meg Linehan. I think that's like the first thing you should do before you search any other take on that, and read the story and read what, you know, what it was and why that is, has absolutely no place in football. And then we can kind of move on with this picking the bones on what is a revolution, what is a reform, formatting, you know, etc.
Yeah, and I know Steph Yang's also written a sort of a follow-up piece about how this
really fantastic
sort of culture
piece, yeah.
Plays out in the whole system from kind of youth football upwards. And not to drop my own plug, but tomorrow night we're going to be getting Steph on TalkSport Women's Football Weekly, and then on Tuesday,
must listen,
I'm going to be doing a real hour long, well, probably like half an hour, 45 minutes actually, kind of deep dive with Megan alongside Dan at The Athletic on a weekly podcast we do where we kind of focus on one story. So that we're going to be doing that with Meg on Tuesday, and I believe it'll come out on Wednesday. So two kind of ones coming up for those who want to kind of chat about it more in depth. But
and with the people that know what they're talking about and, you know, are really on the forefront of this, I think like any bigger issue, you're, especially for someone like me, you're amplifying people's voices as well as staying as vocal as you can. So go listen to Meg and Steph.
And what's the latest? You know, what is there any return date at the moment? Because obviously the story is evolving so quick. And like I said, I do, you know, it's kind of it's not even really the tip of the iceberg. It feels like it's opened a Pandora's box in many ways across so many different clubs, because it's not the first incident this season. But yeah, what's the latest? Because is it still sort of indefinitely suspended, or the idea is that they'll return next weekend? Or
no, it's sooner than that. So the postponement was exclusively about this past weekend, or today, yesterday, Friday, if you like. Those games, according to the league, not the players, but according to the league, will be tried to be slotted in before the playoffs begin on the 1st of November. There is a international window coming up at the end of October, so seemingly you could slot those games in without national team players being available. There are games on Wednesday night. Three games, six
that were already scheduled anyway. Right.
Correct. Those games were already a midweek catch-up. The Dash, Portland, for example, are playing a game in hand this Wednesday night, as far as I know, from what I've heard from the Houston Dash, who've been in, you know, Katie Norton is the PA rep there, and the comms team, they're kind of my liaison. That game is going ahead as of when we're recording this right now. I don't know if that will change, because if you stay closely to the players' demands and the players' power, you know, the removal of Riley and Baird is a player-driven call. On top of that, Gavin Wilkinson, GM of the Portland Thorns, Portland Timbers, if he is still in a job come Wednesday, the Dash are going up to Portland, which is kind of interesting timing. Does that game happen? Because if he is still in a job and he is promoted silence, anti-LGBTQIA+ behavior, if he has, you know, contributed to this anti-protection, this lack of safety, this abhorrent behaviour, then how can he stay in the job? Merritt Paulson, the owner. I think the movement you're seeing now from the Players Association is this rhetoric from Megan Burke, who's leading the CBA, that no single owner has turned up to a CBA meeting yet. Lisa Baird has been the messenger. And so you remove Lisa Baird, and I think what you're seeing is a pressure from the players to the owners to say, oi, come and meet us. So unless you see owners like Merritt Paulson in Portland, who is kind of persona non grata and has been eerily quiet for someone who's always on Twitter, unless you see him come to the table, maybe we see more games cancelled, maybe you see more walkouts, maybe you see strike. I think, again, it's important to emphasise the stories of Sinead and Manor. It's important to emphasise the strength of the players. They're what this league is about. And just the last thing I'll say is, like I said, it goes beyond the NWSL. Gavin Wilkinson is the GM of the Portland Timbers men's team. If he is mirroring any of the behaviour he's shown to be done on the Thorn side, in the Timbers side, this is an MLS issue. It's an issue because athletes everywhere, Bob Baranda, Vancouver Whitecaps Women's Youth Academy, he has, you know, been in court cases for months or 18 months or something for abusing young women. So, you know, this goes beyond the NWSL. It goes into everything. It's in England. It's in, you know, it's a poison. It's a toxic situation that we're all unpacking with. And like I said, strength to the player, strength to Meg, strength to everyone for weaseling it out and having the courage.
Yeah, and I was going to say as well, I mean, I also want to shout out Alex Morgan because yes, I think, yes, you know, obviously she's a player that I've kind of whined about in my time because, you know, we've talked about the sort of like mean girls crew in the US women's national team and those kind of, you know, the cool girls at school, the cool pretty girls at school and how she was kind of part of that crew. But not only did she have a massive impact at Spurs in terms of getting them moved into the men's megaplex in Enfield and doing tons of work off the pitch during her short stint in the UK in terms of chatting to young girls, being involved in the soccer schools, all that kind of stuff, she was instrumental, and I, you know, those who read the piece would have found this out as well because I had no idea. She was instrumental in the creation of the NWSL's anti-harassment policy, and without her, you know, a lot of the incidents and the witness sort of statements wouldn't have been able to be corroborated to Meg for that piece. So yeah, I just, you know, like you like it's just it's a case in point of, you know, like, don't judge a book by its cover. And there's a lot going on behind the scenes. And I really respect the leaders within the US women's national team setup who have from the get-go, most of them anyway, have from the get-go realised the responsibility that they have beyond themselves for the wider women's game, not just in the US, but globally. And, you know, in many respects, the sort of Me Too movement within women's football, if you want to call it that, didn't just start with this article on, what was it, Friday. It started, you know, many years ago, but it does feel like this could be a huge turning point because I think we will see more people, you know, coming to the press or coming to their clubs or coming to the league or whatever to talk about things. And it could bring a huge, you know, wave of much needed change across the sport. And I think it's brilliant to know that, you know, the journalism and that was a part of it. And I just think, yeah, I'm like so much respect to the survivors and those who are brave enough to tell their stories. And yeah, that those telling them as well. And, you know, this is, yeah, only the beginning.
Yeah. No, totally agree.
So on that note, I think we'll wrap
it
up.
Yeah, it's a tough
up.
Place to end. But, can I say one more thing on a light note?
Yes.
And forgive us, listener, if you feel like we're mixing the heavy with the light. But just 4,500 people went to see Nottingham Forest play in the FA Women's National League today. Great to see them using the City Ground, especially for a non-championship, non-FAWSL team. You love to see it. They lost 2-0. It's a local rivals derby, which is kind of funny. But if you believe in the long game, it's a great move for Forest, and it's something we love to see. And in a way, that investment, those little signs, you know, just go watch women's football and go cover it. I know we don't need to tell you, listener.
Yeah, it was a record as well, 4,443 at the City Ground today, and Nottingham Forest men won this weekend as well. So all in all, a fairly positive weekend for them. just before we go, Theo and I probably won't be doing some Champions League podcast for the group stages, really realistically, given our schedules. But if you do want some Champions League content, then listen to the box-to-box Champions League previews. I think they've done two episodes. I need to listen to them.
Two bumper they've had episodes.
Loads of special guests as well. And they are the go-to crew for European women's football. So if you want your Champions League content fix, follow box-to-box, listen to their preview pods. I will be listening. And then, of course, watch it on DAZN for free because they are showing it for free, and enjoy it. And I'm so excited for the group stage of the Champions League. It's going to be wicked. Chelsea playing on Wednesday night at King's Meadow. Hope to try and get there. Not sure. Might have to bail on a friend in order to go there. We'll find out. As always, thank you for listening. Follow at Relatively Football. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. And let us know what you think of the show. And we're always welcome to feedback. Whether it's about your club.
Yeah, shout out Laura Dennison on that respect. She tweeted us from listening to the last show being like, you don't realise actually Arsenal made 8 changes. And she was right. I didn't realise Arsenal made that changes. And it is a sign of just how deep that team is. Obviously, Manor and Heath, again, not starting. So, Arsenal are good. Laura, thanks for pointing that out. We appreciate the feedback. I'm always one to register my incompetence.
So, guess I'll see you this time next week.